Well, hello everybody out there in Turdland. This is your pal Turd coming at you with the latest installment of that TFMR podcast. Sorry we took a couple of weeks off as we were out traveling and vacationing some. And as most people know, part of my traveling this summer, I spent some time out at Freedom Fest, which is a fantastic kind of libertarian-oriented event that is scheduled every year. I think they often hold it in Vegas, so that was kind of convenient too. And I'm walking around getting ready to leave one day, and out of the corner of my eye, I see this guy that I know I've seen before, and I go, dude, that can't be. That can't possibly be. And yes, it was. It was Steve Moore of the Wall Street Journal, I would imagine. Most of you would probably recognize Steve. He's a frequent contributor on all types of mainstream media news shows, and I went up to him and introduced myself, and he graciously accepted the invitation to step here into Turdville. And so, with that, Steve, I appreciate you coming. For those of you that don't know Steve, he is actually, his current employment is with the Wall Street Journal, where he's a senior economic writer and policy analyst and actually sits on the Wall Street Journal editorial board. So Steve, thank you very much for coming on into Turdville.
Hey, hi, Turd. I wanted to call you Craig, but I know everyone calls you Turd. I will too, and it's just a pleasure to be with you on this podcast.
You know what's? Thank you, Steve. What's fun is I've been able to make friends globally through this crazy gig that I have here, and I what's fun is hearing my English friends and my British friends pronounce Turd, because they sound, you know, they've got this proper accent, and then when they spit out the word Turd, it's pretty funny. But again, it's had I known this would grow to what it has, I'd have chosen something more glamorous, but here we are. So Steve, thank you. I very much appreciate it. I wanted to start by I guess we'll just dive right in. You know, your background is as an economist. You know, we saw the stated rate of unemployment uptick this last month, and I spoke with John Williams last month, and he gave us a good explanation of U3 and U6 and how all of that data has changed. But nonetheless, it's still 8.3%, and the stated rate of GDP is down to 1.5%. What do you make of this 4 years on from that financial crisis, and do you see it getting any better anytime soon?
Well, look, this has been it's amazing. It has been 4 years since the financial crisis, almost exactly the four-year anniversary, actually, because it was, September when the market crashed of 2008. And that was such a traumatic experience to see the market just wrench like it did and contract so rapidly and big banks fail. And I remember, what a sense of things just being completely out of control, and a kind of like a man jumping out a window and just falling, and you just don't know when it's going to end. And so here we are. It was a terrible crisis. Barack Obama took over in the midst of this terrible crisis, and I think the tragedy of his presidency is that almost everything he has done try to stem the crisis has only made this a much, much more deep and much more protracted economic collapse. And I say collapse because even though we're technically in a, quote, recovery, I think most Americans think this recession never ended. I don't know about you, but, you know, businesses are still feeling the shrinkage, and workers have seen a $4,000 reduction in their pay since Barack Obama. Families have taken a $4,000 reduction in their income since Barack Obama became president. The unemployment rate is stuck at 8 to 8.5%, and as you said, if we use the correct unemployment rate, it's 15%, which is a catastrophe. So it's very discouraging, but I do think, you know, if you get a regime change in November, you could have a big takeoff. You could have the liftoff that we've been waiting for 4 years now.
Well, regime change certainly wouldn't seem to hurt. As you said, we've seen 4 years of something that hasn't seemed to work. I had a chart I posted earlier this week that just, and it was, I think it was an official, or at least was generated back in 2009, that said, here's what the unemployment rate will be if we don't do the massive stimulus package. Here's what it will be if we do. And then you plot what actually happened. I mean, if I were Mitt Romney, why even run
over and over and over? Yeah. I've seen that chart many times. And, Obama also said in 2008 about this time, a little bit after the collapse happened, he said, if I haven't fixed things in 4 years, I'll be a one-term president. Well, hopefully that's a promise that he keeps, because you know, this, he hasn't fixed things. I don't, you know, some people think things are fixed, but very few do. I saw a poll the other day that 2 out of 3 Americans think we're headed in the wrong direction, not the right direction. So, but on the other hand, you've got Mitt Romney, who's a pretty lousy candidate for the Republicans. He's not done a very good job of really explaining how he's going to rebuild the economy. He hasn't really defended himself against an unbelievably scurrilous attacks by the Obama administration. You don't pay your taxes. You killed this woman because you didn't provide her with health care. I mean, I've never seen anything like this kind of nastiness ever. Yeah. And I've been in campaigns for 30 years. So you think this is bad now. Wait till October rolls around.
Yeah, we haven't even made it to the conventions yet. And I saw just this morning, the latest Rasmussen poll has Romney up 4. So we'll see where we go from here.
Wow, I didn't see that. Every poll I've seen, you mean Obama up 4?
No, it was actually on the Drudge Report this morning. A Rasmussen poll had Romney plus 4. So,
well, you know what? It's interesting because as we speak, you know, this new, a scurrilous ad about Romney and this woman who died of cancer is running on a lot of stations. And I think there is I think that is actually having the opposite effect. I think people are so disgusted by this, you know, low blow, this completely erroneous lie, that I think people are seeing, wait a minute, Obama people are just getting desperate, and they're making accusations that have no basis in fact. So, people want to talk about the economy. They want to understand what Mitt Romney's going to do to try to rebuild the economy, what Barack Obama's going to do. And my feeling is, look, this is a big election, maybe the second most important election of our lifetime, the first most important being the Reagan election in 1980, because we can't continue on the course we're on, just like under Jimmy Carter. You know, we needed an abrupt change in direction that Ronald Reagan gave. I think we need a big change in direction now. We'll see if voters agree with that.
Well, and along those lines, Steve, there are two events that are coming up as we get into the fall, and maybe we won't even deal with them until after the election when we get into a lame duck session. But there's this event that has kind of been loosely called Taxmageddon. I'm not sure if you came up with that title or not, but I thought it was an interesting title where as of December 31st, all of the Bush tax cuts from 10 years ago and so many other different taxes are due to expire and change without some type of action. Do you think, I would really doubt that that's going to be addressed in any congressional sessions before the election. So then we
end up... it could. I actually disagree somewhat with
okay.
you. I think that Obama, now I've been wrong on this. I want to alert your listeners. I've been wrong for the last 6 months because I've been saying Obama's going to come to his senses and he's going to do what's right for the economy in his own reelection and extend these tax cuts. It just doesn't make any sense. Even if you're an extreme Keynesian like he does, it makes no sense in a fragile economy to be, you know, having one of the biggest tax increases in American history. I mean, and of course, from a supply side perspective, raising tax on capital gains and dividends and small businesses is just a disaster waiting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I believe if we get a bad employment report at the end of August, that the president's going to come to his senses and say, look, we can't do this tax increase now. The economy is too wobbly. We're going to put it off for another year. We'll see. As I said, I've been wrong for 6 months about this because Barack Obama is running such a class warfare campaign. You know, the rich are your problem. It's like that scene in the new Batman movie, you know, where Bane, the villain, says to all the people in Gotham City, the rich, they're your oppressors. Those are the people you have to go after, you know, and it's kind of mob rule. That's kind of what Barack Obama is doing. Those rich people, they're your oppressors. It's the people in the penthouses.
Yes.
And I just really hope and pray that the American people don't fall for that kind of class warfare. We're not Argentina.
Yet.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, we're headed in that direction. And, you know, Obama wants us to head in that direction. He wants us to be more like France and Spain and Greece and Argentina and these countries that where fairness is everything. And, of course, fairness in those countries means everybody's equally poor.
Yeah, that's right. Well, here's another one for you, Steve. We went through last August, about a year ago this time, all of the debt ceiling extension debate, which turned out to be a farce. You know, they decided that they were going to have this super committee and that was going to take care of everything. And of course, the super committee came and went without ever really doing anything. So the idea, I think, at the time was to postpone everything and having another debate and another extension until after this election. it doesn't look like they're going to make it. Receipts, revenues haven't been enough to pull that off. I would assume Geithner will just once again borrow from Peter to pay Paul to be able to put it off until after the election. But even after the election, again, what the lame duck session is going to have to handle the next debt ceiling raise. I mean, I don't know. It's not something anybody's really talking about much yet, but is it on your radar? What do you think is going to happen next?
Well, I think they'll probably be able to get into 2013 before they have to raise the debt ceiling. They can use various kinds of tricks to get into the next, you know, the next president who's inaugurated, whether it's Romney or Obama. But, you know, I want to be very clear on this. I believe that economically speaking, the best thing we could do right now would be to allow those spending cuts to happen. I mean, big government is the problem, and it's what's got us into this crisis. So, yes, every agency of government should take a 10 or 15% cut. You know, that's what private businesses and families have done. Why should government be exempt, especially when you've had 40, 50, 60% increases in government spending over the last 3 years under Obama? Government, what we need is more private sector growth and more austerity in government. And it's exactly the opposite of what a lot of people in Washington are saying. They think we need more government growth and the private sector to cut back. Remember what President Obama said, that the private sector is doing just fine. I mean, he really believes that.
Well, he certainly does, and it lays down some a stark contrast for the debate as we head into the fall. Also, as we head into the fall, it seems like everybody's focusing on Europe too. You know, I've actually read some folks that say, "Well, why should we even worry about Europe? That doesn't have anything to do with that." Really, the EU is the third largest economy in the world and our biggest trading partner. I think we need to pay attention to them. Do you follow the euro and what's going on in Spain and Italy? Do you follow that much, Steve? Do you have any thoughts there?
Well, my big thought on it is, this is America looking in the windshield, and this is what's ahead of us.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think Europe is a catastrophe. I just don't see Europe. I don't think the European people get it. I don't think they understand. You know, when you've got people rioting in the streets and marching, keep our benefits, I think they're completely oblivious to the reality that you can't have everybody in the wagon. Somebody has to pull it.
Yeah, sure.
And what's happened in Europe is more and more and more people want a free ride, and they want somebody else to pull it. And what's happened is the people who pull the wagon are leaving. I mean, you've seen what's happening in France, where they're talking about truly, Hollande is really talking about going forward with the 75% tax rate on rich people. Well, you know what, Turd? If they do that, guess what? There won't be any rich people to tax.
That's right.
There won't be any. I mean, we know this from history, and the French will say, you know, this is just great. It's progressive, but they're not going to raise any revenue. In fact, they're going to destroy their economy if they do this. And of course, you've got economists in Washington, around the country, in the U.S. that say, you know, we could have a 50, 60, 70% tax rate and not hurt the economy. That is, you know, a very, very dangerous idea. But those are the kinds of ideas that we're seeing take root in the far left that is so prominent in this administration.
Yes, and again, it almost fails to take into account human nature. Of course, if you see a 75% tax rate, that's going to change your behavior. But again, that those with kind of a static view of things don't tend to take that into account, do they?
They don't. And, you know, this is the real difference between supply side pro-growth people. You know, I came up as a second generation guy, but Art Laffer and Jack Kemp and Reagan and, you know, Jude Winesky and these heroes of that revolution really proved how well this works, right? We saw a massive expansion in the economy in the 1980s when Reagan turned the direction of the economy and cut the top tax rate to 70 to 28%. So much so, Turd, that I thought this was over. This was done. You know, the left said it wouldn't work. We said it would. It did work. And I thought, nobody believes in higher tax rates anymore. And then, of course, Obama came in with his opposite model of grow the government. They said it was going to create 4 or 5 million jobs. It obviously didn't work. And yet, what's the solution? The left says more spending and less tax cuts. So it's very frustrating, but I guess this is what keeps me in business, is that we've got so many, nincompoop economists running this economy.
And your Nobel Prize isn't in the mail yet, is it?
Well, you know, I wrote about Milton Friedman a week or two ago. Milton had just it was the 100th anniversary of his birth. I believe Milton Friedman was the greatest economist of the last 100 years. And he would be on the front line, assaulting and attacking these ideas of Obama. You know, Milton Friedman was famous for saying there's no such thing as a free lunch. And what he meant by that is if the government spends a dollar, it has to come from somewhere. There's no tooth fairy out there. And yet, I'm so amazed at how many people in Washington. Washington is a town where people believe in tooth fairy economics.
Well, and I guess that leads us to a good final question for you. In terms of the dollar has to come from somewhere, the dollars have been coming from the Fed, whether it has been overt quantitative easing programs, which allegedly ended back in June, but the money for a $1.5 trillion deficit is coming from somewhere. There is question, obviously, with the economy where it is, whether there'll be more quantitative, or maybe not so much when or if, but when. You know, a lot of us here in Turdville have figured because the Fed is kind of somewhat been co-opted politically here in this election year, that they're really, their hands are tied until after the election. So I guess my question is, do you see more, first of all, do you see any more quantity? Do you think that is that overt policy of quantitative easing is going to be coming again? And if so, when?
Well, this is the other component of free lunch economics, right? That somehow you can create prosperity by having the Fed print paper money.
Right.
I mean, that's the essence of this, right? I mean, let's keep this very simple. What these economists on the left and the right, a lot, and everybody on Wall Street, rah, 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 print more money. This will get the economy going. This will get the stock market going. You know, we tried that in the 1970s. It didn't end so well when the stock market lost 70% of its value relative to inflation.
Right.
So I think this is an extremely dangerous situation. My buddy Larry Kudlow for CNBC says this better than anybody, that the Fed can print money, but it can't print jobs. And look, if you think that, if anyone out there really believes that the solution to our problem is the Fed printing more money, then explain to me why Argentina, Bolivia, and Mexico aren't the richest countries in the world.
Right.
Because all they do is print money. And of course, it's because, you know, putting zeros on pieces of paper does not make an economy grow faster. Now, we can argue about whether the Fed, you know, has been a little too tight or a little too easy. I think when you've got a situation when you've got a doubling of the money supply over the last 4 years, that suggests to me they've been pretty easy. You got 0% interest rates. I'm not so sure that the Fed even has many more levers that they can pull.
Right. That's the other part of it. Are they pushing on a string at this point, and that every extra dollar of new debt and new money doesn't seem to give you a commensurate impact in GDP or jobs or anything like that? But like we said, it sure seems like that is the policy that they'll follow. If anything, just because devaluing the currency allows you to pay off yesterday's debts with the, you know, cheaper money of tomorrow, and it sure seems like they're headed that direction again.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's the incentive. That's the problem with having this enormous national debt and running trillion-dollar deficits, is that think about what countries do when they get in a debt spiral that the United States is very close to getting into. They do exactly what you just said, Turd. They devalue their currency, and they pay back their creditors with paper currency that's worth less than what they borrowed it for. So the problem with that is once people catch on to that, I'm surprised people haven't caught on already, then you get a big spike in interest rates, just as we've seen in countries like Greece and Spain and Italy. And then you get into this debt spiral where you can't even make your interest payments.
Yep. Yep. Well, and again, that would be, for me, that's part of the rationale behind quantitative easing, obviously, is to keep interest rates as low as they can. We already spent $450 billion.
Yeah, but the Fed doesn't control long. I'm very clear on this.
Sure.
This is one of these kind of lies of economics in the markets. The Fed does not control long-term interest rates. Those are set by the market. And if the Fed keeps easing, I mean, let me put it like this, Turd. What is the most important driver of long-term interest rates?
Well, I would say whether the Fed is participating in that market at this point, Steve.
Well, I mean, to some extent, they can, in the short term, they can manipulate the rate by buying up bonds. But The point I'm making is what ultimately drives 10-year, 20-year, 30-year bond rates is the inflation rate.
Exactly.
And the expected, and what we as economists call the inflation or expectations. So if the Fed continues to lower short-term rates, it oftentimes raises long-term rates because people's expectations of easy money and inflation rises. And that's the kind of, inflation, high interest rate kind of cycle you get. Remember the late 60s and 70s. That's what happened.
Right.
Is, higher and higher and higher rates. And you don't have to imagine that happening again because it is happening right now in a lot of these countries that are just a year or two ahead of us, like Greece and Spain and Italy and France, where their debt costs keep rising because nobody has any confidence in their currency.
Well, and Steve, you just, that's all part of what we talk about here in Turdville, is that end of the Keynesian experiment, and that this devaluation, fortunately, is what will likely continue, and that's why we all own.
I hate to say it, but it may be the only way out.
Yeah. No, well, that's why we all own metals here in Turdville, that's for sure, because that's what we're protecting.
Well, one thing is for sure, if we do get that kind of spike in interest rates and that fall in the dollar, you're going to see the gold price go to, potentially $3,000.
Yeah, you never know. Steve, lastly, just for fun, where the Republican convention does start here in a couple of weeks. The news this morning is that Mitt had narrowed his vice presidential list down to three. Do you want to hazard a guess, or at least tell us all who you would prefer to see?
Well, who are you hearing are the final three? I know Paul Ryan is one of them.
They
who
said,
are the other?
Paul Ryan, the governor Portman is the senator from Ohio, correct?
Right.
And then the governor of, Pawlenty apparently is on the list. And I still think people think the governor of Virginia might be there too.
Okay. Well, I think I've always thought that the best choice by far that Romney could take would be Chris Christie of New Jersey. But Paul Ryan is... young, attractive. He's a young Jack Kennedy. He's a young Jack Kemp. And I think he is the kind of, he would be the life of the party. And I think he would electrify and energize conservative base voters. So he would be my choice among those that you just mentioned. And we will see.
Yeah, it's going to, mine too, in fact. Whether people like his Ryan plan or not, at least he has a plan for crime.
Exactly.
And he's willing to talk about it. So at least that would stir the debate on something that those of us here would like to see discussed. So, hey, Steve, thank you very much. It has really
thank
been a pleasure. I've been a fan for so long and seen you on TV so often. It sure is fun to get a chance to speak with you in person. I hope we can do it again at least sometime in
pleasure
the future.
Pleasure for me, and it's wonderful to visit Turdland.
It's beautiful.
Take care.
It's beautiful this time of year. You should stop by more often.
Bye.
Thanks, Steve.